Welcome to Inspiring Stories for Bower and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.
Hello, my name is Tim McMillan. Welcome to another episode of Inspiring Stories brought to you by Bower and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything. My guest in this episode is a giant of a man in every sense. Physically, he is a mountain of a human, standing almost 2 metres tall. He's got a huge heart as well, and he's a giant in his chosen sport, with a record that few athletes in any sport in any part of the world probably couldn't match. 21 consecutive years a world champion in the sport of wood chopping. Never mind Thor with a hammer, David Foster with an axe is a far scarier proposition, and he is our guest in this episode of Inspiring Stories. David, how are you?
Yeah, very good, and thanks very much, Tim. What a great introduction that you've just made me. I'm sitting down, and I haven't got a hat on, otherwise it'd be very tight.
You would need a big hat, David. I've seen so much footage of you, and you know you are a large human, aren't you?
Yeah. I jokingly tell people that I'm a vegetarian, but I'm not really. Very lucky to have been come from great parent stock. And my father and mother were very, very large, strong people. So, and that's been a great advantage that I've had in the sport of wood chopping, I think.
I know that that wood chopping is very much in the blood in your family, but let's talk about you because, you know, it has been such a big part of your life. And as I mentioned, I dare say there isn't another athlete on the planet who could boast your sort of record and success, over 1,000 titles to your name. But David, what is it about you know, seeing a block of wood and just wanting to punch a hole through it with a blade? What is it that makes you just want to pick the axe up and do that time and time again?
Well, it comes from the family side of it. My father was a world champion, and on my mother's side, mum's brother was a world champion. So there's been world champions right around me. So that's been part of the blood. But I suppose, like most kids out there, if there's any kids listening out there, I was one of the kids that went to school that kind of struggled, was always the last person to be picked in a sporting event. My nickname was Tun, so I copped all the fat jokes. And all of a sudden, you become good at something and you really strive and are... so therefore, you know, I kind of remember what it's like being not picked for an event, and I jokingly tell people the only time I was ever picked first for something was be the anchor man in a tug of war. So being big was an advantage there.
Yeah.
I think once you start believing in yourself and you're good at something. Like you watch the Olympics, and you know people have been there for the, you know, for the last 4 different Olympics. You know, so that's that's a whole lifetime of dedication. So it's just something that you do.
I think a lot of people would have seen wood chopping at some point in their lives, probably most likely at a royal show. Or something like that. You know, you're one of the people that would appear at a royal show and people would stand back and just watch you just obliterate a stump of wood. But just tell us, beyond the royal shows, I mean, how big is the sport of wood chopping around the world?
Yeah, it's actually getting bigger and bigger. We've got the Steel Series, and a lot of people are watching the Steel Series now, and that's that brings the whole world of the whole world that any country... Any country that actually uses a chainsaw, that sort of wood chopping has gone into that series as well now.
Yep.
The Australian and New Zealand, America, Canada are the 4 real big strong countries, and of course the show circuit, every little country show, there was a wood chop. What we've got to remember with the history of wood chopping is actually, I reckon it was the first thing that ever happened on this soil. I couldn't imagine Captain Cook bringing a flagpole all the way from England. So I reckon the first thing happened on this great country here, was a guy use an axe to fall a tree to put the flagpole up. So,
right.
You know, it was the only form of heating and cooking that we had back in the day. And,
yep.
Of course, if you look at all the old houses and stuff, you know, all those trees were cut down by hand and they were all cut up with a cross-cut saw. So it is a part of Australia's history and its heritage.
Yeah, very much so. And going back to your early days, David, do you remember the first time that you saw your dad tearing into a block of wood, or you picked up the axe yourself for the first time?
Yeah, well, I can remember being carted to woodchop carnivals, as you do. If your parent does something, you know, you get carted along. So,
yeah.
And there's a big chance if your dad plays footy that you're going to play footy, or if your mum plays netball, there's a chance you're going to play netball because you get brought up in it. You know, watching my dad win world championships, there was always a dream there of hopefully one day, you know, whether I would be able to win a world title. I must admit, when I first started chopping, I was actually hopeless at it. I'll be honest with you, I could hit the block from one end to the, you know, from one end to the next. But once I learnt the skills, I actually picked it up very, very quick. So there was a lot of natural ability there ready to come out. So I remember going to the Royal Melbourne Show in 1976 and I was a novice underhand cutter. Now, a novice is a guy that's never won an open event.
Mm-hmm.
I got beat in the novice, finished up winning the grand champion of the show, but I also won the Australian hard-hitting championship. Now, the hard-hitting event is a guy when one person chops at a time, and the idea is to sever the block in the least amount of hits.
Yep.
And if two people got the same amount of hits, it comes down the fastest time. So to go to a Royal Melbourne show as a 19-year-old, as a novice, and not winning that, but coming away as an Australian champion, it's not a bad start for a sporting career.
Pretty darn good. And it wasn't long before you got drafted into the national team. I mean, tell us some of the places you got to go to throughout your career.
I've been so lucky. We talk about in this great country the opportunities that sport can give you. You know, I made the Australian team in 1980. I became captain of that team in 1982. I captained the Australian team for 21 years.
Mm.
I've travelled to New Zealand, America, Canada, Jakarta, China. It's definitely given me the opportunity to travel and show some of my skills to the rest of the wood chopping world.
Yeah. And in terms of, you know, your natural ability and the experience you pick up, the science of it all, I mean, how much of it is your physical prowess, David, and how much of it is you just... I don't know how to describe it, but kind of understanding the wood and how it's going to, you know, implode under the weight of your blade that you're wielding in its direction.
Yeah. I never got too caught up in the scientifics of it. I always thought that wood chopping was probably one of the easiest things out there, in a sense, is that it's you and a piece of wood and an axe in your hand. So when you think about that, you know, when you play other sports, you're depending if you're playing footy, you know, there's a forward line and a centre and a back line, and you're kind of depending on those people. But really, I just treated wood chopping as I treated the piece of wood as the enemy because of my nature, a very happy-go-lucky person. And you've got to have, they talk about this killer instinct. You've got to have this killer instinct. You know, when I first started wood chopping, I was chopping beside my dad. Now, you know, my dad was my idol. Like, I loved him.
Mm.
So how do you get this killer instinct that you're supposed to hate your father? Well, it's nearly impossible. You know, that's nearly impossible. So I used it. So I stopped and I thought that I never thought about chopping against my dad or chopping against my best mate. I was actually competing against this piece of wood. This piece of wood become the enemy.
Yeah.
And so I actually focus on the piece of wood that I was cutting.
I must say, watching the footage of you, and especially when it's a wide shot and you get to see some of your competitors, I mean, I think fair to say you're generally the largest person in the lineup, aren't you? And yet the speed, yeah. You seem to almost, you know, get three whacks in for everyone else's two. I can only, you look like a man possessed.
I just tell people that I think everybody has got this hidden talent that they're actually good at something. You know, I've tried to play tennis. You know, how does Roger Federer hit a ball at 220 kilometres an hour, then he puts a backspin on it or something? Yeah. You know, I just think everybody's got a bit of a talent out there. So I was very, very lucky and fortunate that I was bigger than most people, but I was very, very agile.
Extremely.
So that's a gift.
Yeah, absolutely. Love to hear more and more about your wood chopping adventures, David. We need to take a break, so please stick around and we'll get more into your extraordinary career right after this. This is Inspiring Stories. David Foster is our special guest. Back with more in a moment.
You're listening to Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything. Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything.
Welcome back to Inspiring Stories. Everyone has a story to tell. This one, a little bit unusual. We've spoken to people from all walks of life on this program, but never before have I been able to speak to a world champion wood chopper. That's what we're doing right now with David Foster. And as far as wood chopping prowess goes, they don't come much bigger and better than my guest. David, we've talked about, you know, your history with the sport and some of your extraordinary achievements. Can we just get into some of the nitty-gritty of your sport? Firstly, I mean, your relationship with the axe, is it like a third limb for you? Do you have a favourite? Do you have a name for your favourite axe?
Yeah, all of the above. Yes, I used to name all my axes, because when you have about 100 axes and they're sitting in a locker,
100,
and yeah, they're all a bit different grinds of axes. They're all a bit different shapes and sizes.
Yeah,
because all the wood that we cut throughout the world is a different species. You know, yeah. When we come to Western Australia, we cut jarra. Now, jarra is a very hard, dense timber.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't use an axe that you used in jarra. You wouldn't use that cutting mountain ash, which is the timber that we cut in Victoria. So and in Tasmania. So you have all different axes. I used to, when I in the world titles at Sydney show, say I would have an axe that I would use in the heat. The semi and the final, and then I would put that axe away and then use that again next year. So that axe would never be used. So when I pick an axe up, and you like it's all about confidence, I suppose. And I think you hear other sportsmen that they have a routine. You know, like my routine was when I picked up an axe that I knew I won with it last time, it just give you that confidence. You know, and there'd be things along the way that you would do. You know, for some silly reason, if I was walking to the show, I would never ever walk under a ladder for some stupid reason, because I reckon that's bad luck. But, you know, I think all sportsmen have a little routine. And, with my axes, you know, they were the reason that I, you know, the axe was part of David Foster, so therefore that you had to look after him.
Yeah. How do you go travelling through airports when you're off to competitions and you turn up with a bag of axes? You must get a few raised eyebrows.
Oh, mate, hasn't things changed? I can remember back in the day when I first started chopping, you could actually carry an axe through the airport. You know, you'd have an axe on the cover and you'd be carrying it through the airport. You put them in the overhead locker above you.
Really?
Like, you know, now you can't even, I can't even take my knitting needles on the plane, you know. I'm only joking about the knitting needles. But no, how things have changed. So, we all put them in boxes. If you notice, all the wood choppers, they do look after their axes. They're like in nice sort of boxes. They're wrapped up in special covers because that is that's the reason for either winning or losing.
Yeah. In terms of the woods that you would have chopped over the years, and you mentioned the famous Jarrah that we have here in Western Australia. Yeah. Do you have a personal favourite where you just go, oh, I'm licking my lips, I want to get into this one?
Yeah. No, I think to be the best at anything, you've got to be able to cut all species of wood. So all woods was a challenge.
Yeah.
You know, like I won the Champion of Champions at the Royal Perth Show every time I went there pretty well. So therefore, I could learn to cut the Jarrah. Then you go to Melbourne Show where they cut, you know, a mountain ash. So I wanted to be, you know, you have these little personal things in your head. Like I wanted to be the best wood chopper as I could. For as long as I could, but I wanted to be able to do it in all sorts of wood. So there are competitors out there that are much better in softwood and in hardwood, but I wanted to be the best as I could in all species of wood.
Mm.
But I suppose when you look at it, everybody talks about Sydney Show. That's the Wimbledon of wood chopping. If you can win a world title in Sydney, you can call yourself the best. Just to prove how hard it is to become a legend in our sport, you've got to win 8 or more world titles in Sydney. There's only been about 14 people in the 150-year history that have ever done that, and I've won 60 world titles in Sydney. So
wow.
I think that sort of sums up just what a fantastic career that I've had.
It is absolutely extraordinary. I could be here for the whole hour just listing every award, every title that you'd won, and I'd still probably only be partway through. In terms of the honours that have been thrown your way, David, I mean, you've been awarded an Order of Australia in the Queen's Birthday honours list. You've been a Tasmanian of the Year, not just Tasmanian Axeman of the Year, but Tasmanian of the Year. You've been an ambassador for Tasmania. You've been awarded the Centenary Medal by your governor of Tasmania. So many. But which are the ones that you are most proud of?
Oh, I remember when I went to Jakarta in 1979.
Yep.
I seen kids begging for food. And I come home and I said to my wife, we'd only had a little baby by that stage in 1980. And I said to my wife, whatever I can, I'm going to raise some money for charity.
Yep.
So I think the reason that I've become as good as I have in the sport is because of all the charities that I got involved in. It just made me realise just how lucky I am to have two arms and two legs and to be able to follow a dream where there was a lot of charities out there that I've been involved in that those kids will never ever get the opportunity to have and have done the things that I've done. So I think, you know, to be reckoned, like people raise money and we do things and we don't do it because we want recognition. We want to do it because we want to contribute something back.
Yeah.
And that's why I come from very humble beginnings and I classify myself as a very humble person, being very gifted that I can win world championships, but I'm really no different than anybody else. So I think, you know, in my sport, to be the first axeman in 150 years to be in the Australian Sporting Hall of Fame,
That's
to me,
pretty special.
That was a great thrill.
Yep.
You know, to be in the National Portrait Gallery as one of 20 famous Australians, that's the stuff that really is nice, I think.
In terms of the charitable stuff that you've done over the years, David, you've done it in part alongside another famous and well-moustached Tasmanian in David Boone. How did you guys meet?
Yeah, just through the sporting side of it.
Yeah.
We actually got involved in a beer drinking ad.
Who won?
Pretty close to Boone, as we all know. He's quite famous for that. And if you speak to all my wood chopping mates, you'll find that I've been renowned to put a couple away as well. So that's how Boone and I got involved. We took our moustaches off. David Boone and I had never ever taken our moustaches off. And we said we'd do it for $50,000 each for cerebral palsy. And we raised $100,000 to put our... You got to take our moustaches off. So that's some of the things you get a chance to do.
Brilliant. I've got to ask, who won the beer drinking competition?
Well, I think David just said we'll just keep it as a dead eat. I think we did one We did one filming one day, and we did drink about three cartons of beer, and only one of the ads made television. So I think that proved that we were probably even.
Yeah, fair enough. He would have looked quite comical next to you, David. I mean, he's
Boonie's Boonie's an icon as well. Yeah, he's an Australian icon. So he was a famous, you know, he's famous for the beer drinking. Exports, so yep. I'm another great Tasmanian.
Yeah, are you guys still in touch?
Yeah, we don't see each other a lot because of our different areas, but we always catch up when we get a chance.
Yeah, brilliant. In terms of other campaigns, if you like, that you've been a part of, it was perhaps a surprise to some that you came out as a campaigner for LGBT rights. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, very old school, as you can imagine. You come from, you know, very old school. Then I, you know, just the opportunity come that my daughter was in a relationship, and I just realised that she had trouble sort of, you know, because of maybe who I was and the thoughts that maybe that she thought. So, I just think that everybody's equal in this world, and so it was actually quite easy for me, really, at the finish.
Yeah, I can imagine though in the sort of company that you keep in the wood chopping world, there'd be some fairly conservative people quite stuck in their ways. Did you ever face any challenges on that front when you came out and did become a voice for those seeking rights for the LGBT community?
Yeah, no, I think generally there's going to be a percentage of people in the world that are never going to change.
Anyway. Yeah.
You've got to realise that. But I think I think the world has changed that much, and it was very interesting. Like my father-in-law, like he was in his 80s and he accepted it. And I just think that's one great thing about this great country of Australia is that we are so lucky that we can have our own opinions as well. We've got this free vote and we've got this really great country. I just think that I think I might have even gained a little bit more credibility, I think, by coming out and supporting that.
Yeah, good on you. Well, I'm sure it helped to bring you and your daughter closer together as well.
Yes, it did. It did.
Good stuff. Let's take a break, David. I want to ask you about your book after that, The Power of Two.
Okay.
I love the blurb that comes when if you look up The Power of Two. I'll just read it out before we go to the break. It says, with each blow of his wood chopping axe, he produces more power than the world's greatest hammer throwers, with the balance and poise of a Nureyev, the agility of a gymnast, and a delivery speed three times faster than that of Muhammad Ali in his prime. That's pretty good.
Yes.
Did you write that yourself, David?
Yeah, no, I didn't write that. I didn't do all those statistics, but they did a survey. They did a thing on me at the Royal Adelaide Show.
Yeah.
And where they measured the axe handle, they took photos of me, took videos, and then that's how they come up with the. With all those statistics.
Well, it's very impressive. And let's just let that sit while we go to a break, David. We'll be back with more right after this. This is Inspiring Stories.
Thanks, mate.
Back with more in a moment.
You're listening to Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything. Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.
Welcome back to Inspiring Stories. Everyone has a story to tell, and in this episode we are hearing the story of champion woodchopper David Foster. David, I've seen some footage of you over the years, and look, as I mentioned, you are, you know, quite a big unit, which has been used definitely to your advantage in your chosen sport. At times, though, it looks like you've had to go on a bit of a health kick. But tell me, I mean, what's an average day's intake for you in terms of food on the table, and how do you prepare for a big comp?
Well, In my heyday, I got very nervous, so I couldn't eat. To be honest with you, I didn't eat any. I'd had a job to eat breakfast, wouldn't eat nothing during the day.
Yep.
But at tea time, I would go and have two main meals and maybe a few beers.
Yep.
I did actually hurt my back, and I was supposed to have a back operation. I was out of action. I was actually bedridden for about 7 weeks.
Yep.
So to get back into it, I had to sort of lose a bit of weight, and I finished up getting a dietitian, and the dietitian said to me, you know, asked me what my food intake was in my career and what else have you. And when I told him, you know, what I used to do, he had trouble believing that, you know, like I'd finish up at Sydney show, I'd have two main meals for tea, maybe drink maybe 8 or 9 or 10 beers, and then go and win a world title the next day. And he said, you know, that's just unbelievable, David. Just imagine how good you've been if you ate properly. But I put on weight very, very quick. I tell people I can see a cream cake and put a couple of kilos on. So I do try to look after myself. I'm 60. I'm 64 years of age, and yep. You know, so you've got to kind of try and look after yourself a bit.
Yeah, I can imagine it's a pretty brutal sport. It's a very repetitive and straining, at times very elastic sort of action. Wood chopping. How's everything holding up now at the age of 64?
Yeah. Apart from the back operation that I needed to have, but I didn't have. But apart from that, you know, I jokingly tell people that, you know, life begins at 40. It begins to deteriorate. So I've had nothing wrong with me until I got to 40. And then all of a sudden, you know, you tear a few muscles and this happens and that happens. And I think if you speak to a lot of other people, a lot of other sportsmen, is that, you know, once you get to a certain age, the body does break down. And you've just got to, you know, change your training and change your thoughts. So going pretty good, really, for 64.
Yeah, good to hear. Tell me about your beloved wife, Jan. I know she's been by your side from the get-go, and I know she's had some health troubles in more recent years. But let's start at the beginning of your amazing love story. Where did you guys meet?
Well, her father was a wood chopper, and he finished up becoming my trainer.
Yeah, right.
So that's how we met, at a wood chop.
Yeah, of course you did.
And of course you nearly have to. But I think that was one of the real reasons that I become as good as I have as well, because wood chopping is such a selfish sport in a sense, because, you know, you spend a lot of time in the wood chopping arena. There was never a lot of money in it, so half the time that your partner stops home, and you away doing the wood chopping at the major shows and stuff. So I think I was very, very lucky to have married Jan, and she stopped home, looked after my four kids while I travelled the world, and like as you mentioned, 11 years ago, Jan had a brain aneurysm and a stroke, and she had a category 5, and you mostly die from that. She's home with me, and we're getting on with life, and things are pretty good.
Tell me about your retirement, David, because as I've mentioned a few times, you know, 21 consecutive years a world champion, over 1,000 championships to your name. Did you know it was time, and what was it like when you finished up professionally, at least?
Yeah. I think you know. I haven't really officially retired, in a sense. I'm still in the veteran. I still enjoy the veteran side of it.
Yeah.
I'm still involved in. I'm the president of the Axioms Association, and I help run things. So it's always going to be a part of your life, because, you know, I'm as a kid growing up with my dad. So I'm 64 years of age, and all my life I know that there's always been wood chopping in my life. So it's very, very hard to walk away. And I can understand some sportsmen, you know, getting to that high level and then walking away and then wanting to come back and try to get those glory days back. I know for a fact that my glory days of being the king of the wood chopping arena, those days are gone because father time catches up.
Yeah.
But I still think if you can still be involved in the sport that you love, it's quite easy to sort of step back a bit. You know, I'm very lucky that I've got a son. He's made his mind up to really, really have a big kick. He's won one world title, and you know, and I think he wants to win a world title in Sydney, and you know, that's the thing that really is keeping me going and motivated in the sport.
I suppose it gives extra emphasis to that phrase, a chip off the old block.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Sorry, that's really bad. I'm sure you've heard that once or twice before.
No, it's all good. He's definitely my son. There's no need to do anything either. So I'm lucky there.
On a very practical level, forgive me for asking these banal questions here, David. On a very practical level, I mean, have you got wood heaters at home? Are you out there chopping wood for you and everyone else in the street?
My dad used to. When Dad passed away, he said, I remember all these dear old pensioners said, oh, your dad used to drop wood around for us, all of our chopping blocks wood. So we used to keep doing that. Now, I've still got a wood heater.
Yeah.
But after Jan being sick, we do have gas heating here because it's so much easier for her to turn it on. So
yeah.
I do have a wood heater, but I do have gas heating as well.
Okay. And everyone else in the street, they're all okay too?
Yeah, they're okay. And I got plenty of wood as well.
Very good. David, we need to take another break. More to get through, though, right after this. This is Inspiring Stories. David Foster is our special guest. Back with more soon.
You're listening to Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything. Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.
Welcome back to Inspiring Stories. Tim McMillan is my name. My special guest is David Foster. David, do you find, I mean, you're kind of immersed in this subculture, if you like, of wood chopping. Is there a kind of fascination from the outside, do you think, with, you know, people who represent that subculture, you know, like you do? I mean, I must say I'm intrigued about this world of wood chopping, and I suppose even recently, you know, it's become a cool thing to do for people to throw axes at targets. I don't know if you get into any of that at all. You're probably better at wielding it than throwing it, but you know, have you felt like you've kind of been this novelty figure over the years?
Well, let's hope there's some of these younger wood choppers coming through that I've inspired.
But
I think one good thing, one thing I think the reason that wood chopping is actually in people's minds and stuff, because I think a lot of people, a lot of Australians, we love our heritage.
Yep.
And we love where we come from, and people are doing family trees. And the amount of people that have come to me and said, oh, my father actually wood chopped, or my great uncle was a bushman. People are going to their family trees and family trees, that's a good one. You're doing their family history, and wood chopping has been a part of that, because not forgetting as well that the only form of heating back in the earlier days was with wood.
Mm.
So there's a lot of times that the husband would be out working, out camping away for a week, and the wife or the female at home, she would be the one that would be cutting the wood and keeping the fires going and doing the cooking. So I think that's part of, I think, why that people do love wood chopping.
The romance of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know at some point you had to contemplate the unthinkable, David, in packing up all your belongings and leaving your beloved Tasmania, you know, along with your many, many, many titles and trophies and all sorts of other things you picked up over the years. Obviously, that idea got shelved. But tell us about the circumstances around that and what a wrench that would have been to rip yourself away from Tassie.
Yeah, I'm born and bred Tasmanian, so I don't think I was ever going to go, to be honest with you. I think the media did blow it up far more than what it was about. I had to pack up all my trophies.
You can't trust the media.
Looking for a home for them because, I was an axeman that never ever threw anything away. To me, it was a great honour to be able to win something, but somebody had bought you that trophy, so that was an honour as well, you know. So somebody had actually spent money and bought, that you won a trophy. So I bought everything home. So after winning so many events, you had all these trophies and stuff. So I did have the opportunity to put them out, and then unfortunately, through different circumstances, that fell through. And then I got a mate that was in New South Wales. He said, "Hey, David, why don't we set your museum up in Sydney? You're a bloody icon here. We can set up a restaurant." But the only issue was that we had to live in Sydney, and not taking nothing away from Sydneysiders, but why would I want to leave Tasmania? I've got four kids. I've now got eight grandkids, all living in Tasmania. So I've got no need to leave this great country, this great state,
and an island covered in trees that, well, some of which need chopping.
Well, I jokingly tell people my ancestors settled in the Simpson Forest, and now it's the Simpson Desert.
But nice one. I know you've done a lot of public speaking over the years too, David. What are the sorts of questions that people have for you that keep coming up? What are the stories that they most enjoy hearing?
I just think as a kid that went to school to have lunch, topped the class there by eating lunch, and has come out to be one of the great athletes of the world. I'm not saying that, but that's what people say. The only person in sporting history to win a world title 21 years straight, to win 60 world titles in Sydney. The only person to win over 1,000 championships in any sport. So it all started off with by very humble beginnings, and I think once you put that into a story, I think everybody has a story to tell, like I'm telling my story today. But I think if you sit down with anybody, everybody's got a story to tell.
Yeah.
And my story is about a kid had a dream and it became much bigger than what anybody could ever imagine.
What would you have done with your life, David? You don't ever want to really entertain the thought, but if you'd done your back, crippled your back as a 20-year-old, and wood chopping was just not even an option for you, what would life have been like for you, do you think? What would you have done?
No, you can't. You haven't got a crystal ball. I never ever thought that I would hurt my back. So that was what sort of ruined my career, is really being number one. You set yourself up in life where Jan and I bought a cafe, and we were looking at that side of it, and Jan has a brain aneurysm and she has brain damage. So you can't really, you can only sort of half guess what things might have turned out to be otherwise. But I just tell kids that it makes no matter what you do in life, we've got one opportunity at it, and make the most of it. So whatever comes your way, just make the most of it. And the reason that I've been so successful in wood chopping is that I've enjoyed the journey.
Yeah.
And I think if you enjoy the journey, and I tell kids that your dream will come true, because we live in Australia, and it's the greatest country in the world. And after watching the Olympics, and it just gives you goose pimples that people can achieve things in this great country of ours.
Wouldn't it be great when the Olympics come to Australia in 2032, yeah, David, if we could get wood chopping on the menu there?
Yes, I've already had an interview. I've already had a sort of interview with that, and hopefully
is that
we
right?
Can push, hopefully we can push, because the host nation can pick out a couple of sports. So let's hope that we can get wood chopping in the Brisbane Olympics in 2032.
So this is not a joke that I'm throwing out there. This is
no,
real.
No, not a joke at all. So,
yeah, right.
So let's hope we can keep pushing that there.
Have you tried before? Has it ever been on the radar?
Yes, at the Sydney Olympics, I was on the committee.
Yeah.
And we got down to the final six sports, And unfortunately, we missed out at the Sydney Olympics. But let's hope that Brisbane, we might be able to get a bit better hearing.
That would be remarkable, and testament to you and your position and your great pedigree in the sport, David. And who knows? Maybe your son Stephen might be in his prime as well.
Well, you never know. I could have a grandchild that's into it as well, so that might be nice.
Have you bought the grandchildren their own axes yet?
They're a little bit junior. They've gone into iPads and stuff. So if there's a world championship for an iPad operation, I reckon a couple of my grandkids would be the best at it.
Oh, that's depressing, isn't it? I mean, probably that'll be an Olympic sport before wood chopping is. Have you got all your fingers left, David?
Yeah, mate. Very lucky. All my fingers and toes. I jokingly tell people that I'm a real Tasmanian. I've got 14 toes, so I'm lucky.
Because I must say that, you know, I don't know what particular event you call it, but, you know, where you're standing on top of the log and you're basically swinging it and, you know, landing blows centimetres away from your feet, I get nervous even watching it. So I'm glad to hear you're all intact.
Yeah, no, and of course we wear our Dunlop volleys as well. So
of course.
So we don't waste a lot of money on Sanchez if we do happen to cut them.
The white pants, though, are they standard issue, are they? The famous white pants that you wear?
Yeah, I'm in favour of changing the white pants, but unfortunately
Not very practical.
With colour and stuff. Not very practical with chopping blocks and stuff.
No,
but anyway,
not with sawdust flying around. David, what's next for you? Obviously, you know, you're still throwing the axe around in the seniors ranks.
Yep.
You've got your hands full with your family. Is there anything else that you are still yearning to achieve in your extraordinary and colourful life?
No, I just love the opportunity to spend with my grandkids.
Yep.
And you know, watching them, I've got a granddaughter who is she's 12 and she's 6 foot, and she's playing basketball.
Say again, she's 12 and she's six foot.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, and she's playing basketball, and to see her, you know, doing that, I just love spending the time now with my grandkids, helping my son Stephen hopefully fulfill his dream now of winning a world title in Sydney. So just virtually enjoying life, to be honest with you.
Good on you. Nothing wrong with that at all.
Nothing at all.
Good luck in bringing wood chopping to the world stage, on the Olympic stage at least, in 2032. David, that would be extraordinary.
No worries.
Thank you so much for sharing your story
with
us. Yeah, with you there leading the charge, I have every faith in it coming to reality.
Thank you very much.
David, thank you so much for sharing your story. It's been fascinating getting an insight into the wonderful world of wood chopping. So thank you again.
No worries, mate. Thank you.
Thank you. You've been listening to Inspiring Stories here on 882 6PR. Don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything. We look forward to you joining us next time as we unearth another inspiring story.
You're listening to Inspiring Stories for Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything.